Blog Talk Radio.
Microphone still with some new equipment, so we hopefully have those all corrected. We are a few days away from probably the most important presidential and national election, even local elections, in modern American history. And one of my favorite presidents, because of what isn't known about him, what isn't well known about him, is Warren G. Harding, and we'll get into that. Anyway, here are the births today on November 2nd. Edward V, he didn't live very long. Son of, I forgot which king, so many of them. Anyway, he was believed to have been murdered by Richard III, who was a hunchback, and was defeated in a battle in the famous words he used after he was unhorsed, "My kingdom for a horse." And it's the end of the War of the Roses, in which the Tudors won, and the last of the Tudors was Elizabeth I, and then we got the Stuarts, the Scotch. Also on this day, Daniel Boone was born. Marie Antoinette let him eat cake. Now, it's said that she was from Austria, and she was married as a teenager to Louis XVI, who had a problem. He had to have surgery on his penis. And you can imagine, in those days, they didn't have anesthesia or morphine. Maybe they had morphine. I doubt it. Anyway, she was so naive, even though she's said to have been well-meaning, she thought, oh, they don't have bread, so maybe they have cake. So let them eat cake. And that really infuriated the peasants. And, of course, we've seen this attitude of the aristocracy here in America today, where you have these yuppies who can afford to lease expensive BMWs, Mercedes, these SUVs, which they can handle, and they can't afford to pay payments on, but they lease. And they drive around. If you're in their way, they try to run you over, and it's happened. And also these bicyclists. They're behaving like the French aristocracy just before the French Revolution, where if a peasant or a pedestrian was in the way of a French aristocrat on a horse or his carriage, they just ran these people down. And this attitude is, we see this today in this epidemic of reckless driving. This is my definition. In 1795, one of the great American presidents was born, Scotch-Irish ancestry, James Knox Polk. He was one of the few presidents who said, I don't want a second term. But one of the biggest expansions of American territory, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, was acquired during the Mexican War, which he signed the Declaration of War against Santa Anna and that, and of course was urging from Texas. Now, Abraham Lincoln, who was in the House of Representatives, opposed the Mexican War, and he said, pointed to a map and said, "Show me the spot on this map where blood has been spilled." Well, that caused Lincoln the election in the Congress, but it was probably a good thing for him because then he went back and licked his wounds and came back as the Republican nominee of the nominee of the Republican Party, a new party, and won the 1861 election. Incidentally, the new movie Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis is an Irishman, probably is believed to have Lithuanian Jewish ancestries. Of the four movies on Abraham Lincoln, two of them, this is the latest one, have featured foreign-born actors. I don't think Daniel Day-Lewis is an American citizen. John Huston was born in Canada. He was Toronto, Canada. He was the father of Walter Huston. Was born in Canada. He starred in an early silent version of Lincoln. And his son was John Huston, who was born in Nevada, and he's the grandfather of Angelica Huston. Ran in the family. And also on this day, Warren G. Harding was born, the last of the Ohio presidents. Before him was Garfield, who was assassinated, and he was also born on this day. He was elected to the presidency on this day. Harding's very interesting. He was a slob. He was a product of the smoke-filled room. His was the only election, the 1921 election, in which no candidate was a lawyer. There were three news people, three journalists. One, Cox, and it's interesting, both presidential candidates. James Cox was the Democratic nominee. Franklin Roosevelt was his vice presidential nominee. Cox was an Ohio newspaper publisher. Warren G. Harding was an Ohio newspaper publisher, a U.S. senator. And the middle name G. Gamaliel, his mother made it up because she wanted something to sound biblical. Now, Woodrow Wilson, his predecessor, was brought to his attention by Joseph Tumulty, his press secretary, that Harding may have, quote, I'm quoting, Negro blood. Woodrow Wilson, although he was a segregationist and from Virginia, didn't want anything to do with that canard, as some people thought called it. But they kept pressing Harding, and Harding finally said, I can't help it if one of my ancestors jump over the back fence. Now, this whole political fiction about Barack Hussein Obama being the first African president or Negro or black president is a political fiction. If the Harding ancestry story is true, and we believe it is true, there seems to be there's photographic evidence, and I think some people did some very specific ancestry research. So it's another fiction on Mr. Rowe. Also on this day, he's a big fat guy, kind of bumbling, Paul Ford. He was in, the last movie was in Music Man. He was born on this day, a comic actor. Luciano Visconti, great Italian producer, director, he was gay. His last film was Death in Venice, which was based on the life, a kind of fiction of Gustav Mahler, the great Czech a Jewish composer and conductor of the New York Philharmonic. He composed 10 symphonies. He didn't finish the 10th, and didn't do any operas, and he did a lot of work. He composed a symphony, which his symphonies are massive. Like the 8th symphony uses about 800 people, including musicians and chorus. And he did this all in the summertime when he took his vacations from conducting the New York Philharmonic and the Vienna Opera. A very prodigious worker. And he died of a heart attack. His wife, Alma, had a daughter, and she was supposed to have been a composer also. Burt Lancaster is born on this day. If you remember the movie Here to Eternity, and also The Birdman of Alcatraz. Now, there's a fiction about him, of Robert Stroud. He was a very obstreperous inmate, and a lot of questions about how he behaved when he was at Alcatraz. So when you go over there, if you come to San Francisco, it's a great tour. You'll see Al Capone's cell, but you won't be allowed to go in it. It's on a second tier. And we have some video of that. Burt Lancaster was also abusive to women. He was from New York. He was in quite a few movies. Great actor. And he was also in Elmer Gantry, and with his distinct accent. On Rose Byrd, who was Jerry Brown, the current governor of California in his third term. He had an interregnum there. He appointed the first woman as Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court. She was thrown out, rejected by the voters, and when she ran for confirmation of re-election, re-election because of the death penalty, and that's on our California ballot today in this election. Also, California Secretary of State has done an audio of the issues and the candidates in our voters' handbook, and you can download this, and we'll play it. If I can pull it up, we'll play the introduction to that audio voters' handbook. Let's see, who else? Pat Buchanan, who is a right-wing conservative columnist. His sister is Bay Buchanan. I think she became a Mormon. Another great musician. He was not only a conductor and composer, he was also had a degree in medicine, but he died of a heart attack. Giuseppe Sinopoli did quite a few recordings. Among the deaths today was James Thurber, and who was quite an American humorist, and Edith Bunker. Among the events today was 12,000 Jews in 1648 were massacred. It's one of the biggest massacres of Jews before Hitler. Washington gave his farewell, 1783, to the army. He was called back to put down the Whiskey Rebellion in Pennsylvania. The farmers were protesting the tax, and they revolted and protested against the new American government. James Garfield, the last Ohio candidate for the presidency. He was also served in the Civil War as a general. He was elected president and was later assassinated. Two states were entered into the Union in 1889, North Dakota as the 39th and South Dakota as the 40th. In 1915, back to American elections, the first U.S. election by proportional representation. It used to be that the state legislatures elected their senators, and I believe that's how Warren Harding became a U.S. senator from Ohio. 1917, the first U.S. American soldiers, U.S. Army soldiers, were killed in combat when we entered World War I. And this is important, and this is the source of the dispute and the confrontations and combat between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Arthur Balfour was the foreign secretary in the British government, conservative, during World War I. To get Jewish supports and the Zionist support, he came up with a document called the Balfour Declaration. What that meant was, or what that said was, in return for Jewish support for the Allies in World War I, Britain would try to set up a homeland for the Jews. It was called Palestine. And this is the source of the modern state of Israel, that Jews after World War II, who were freed from the concentration camps and who were displaced persons, DPs, the state of Israel was set up in 1948, and this was over the objections of the Palestinians, who said, you know, that the Jews were kicked out by the Romans after Masada. But the Jews and the Zionists said, hey, Balfour made an agreement. The British are here to enforce it, and then they leave when we set up the state of Israel. President Harry Truman was the first, one of the first world leaders to recognize the modern state of Israel in 1948. And we've had this conflict ever since between the Palestinians, Hamas, and all these other extreme groups. The Muslim Brotherhood is part of it, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and the American and European and Oriental Jews who went to Israel, emigrated to Israel because it was set up as the first modern Jewish state. In 1920, KDKA in Pittsburgh was the first radio station, commercial radio station set up. Now, the K letters in radio stations, K was the designation for radio stations and TV stations east of the Mississippi. West of the Mississippi, the designation is a W. I don't know why KLW, the FM station which I was affiliated with, we were the first FM station owned and set up by a school district, the San Francisco Unified School District, and it's probably the only one existing today. I'm no longer with it. In 1930, Haile Selassie was crowned emperor of what was Abyssinia and became Ethiopia. And shortly afterwards, the Italians and the Mussolini invaded Abyssinia, claiming that it was part of the Roman Empire and was going to be part of the new Roman Empire. And Haile Selassie went to what was then the League of Nations in Geneva and protested and asked for help to censor the Italians. And He got nowhere with his famous video clip, which we didn't have time to pull up. Selassie was later forced out by the Muslim extremists. Now, Abyssinian or Ethiopia, the religion, the Catholic religion there was called the Coptics. They're the same ones who are in Israel, not in Israel, Egypt, and they are a minority. And they are being persecuted by the Muslim Brotherhood, which has taken over Egypt. 1936, the first high-definition TV broadcast was broadcast by the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation in Britain. 1942, the British General Montgomery, Bernard Law Montgomery, with American aid, he had 1,000 tanks and guns, defeated Field Marshal Rommel, the Desert Fox, at the Battle of El Alamein. It finally concluded, and Rommel did not have the gasoline, and he did not have the tanks, and had he had them, he might have resisted defeat by the British. But and also, he was always, Rommel was never at the critical point in a battle. He was sick, and he was invalided home to Berlin before the battle started at El Alamein. And when he was deputy at Normandy, he went home for his wife's birthday on June 5th. And, of course, the Allies invaded on June 6th. So it's interesting. He was never there at the critical at a battle at the critical time of the beginning. In 1947, Howard Hughes flew his Spruce Goose, this huge airplane, which I believe is now either up in Oregon, was supposed to be down in Long Beach. And, of course, Howard Hughes was kind of an eccentric. Hughes, his family's fortune was made in oil drilling tools, the Hughes Tool Company, and made money in Texas, and is a famous movie starring Leo DiCaprio. And, of course, Howard Hughes later became a very strange recluse in Las Vegas, and he was surrounded by Mormons who were his guards. In 1948, another presidential election, Harry Truman defeated Dewey, and of course, the famous Chicago Tribune headline, which came out prematurely, had Dewey defeating Truman, and Truman just relished it, and he was photographed holding up Colonel Robert McCormick's Tribune, which had Dewey defeated Truman when it didn't happen. 1954, the first black congressman was elected from the state of Michigan, and that was Charles Diggs. I think he's still around. In 1956, I vaguely remember this, our boarding school, we had two young Hungarian freedom fighters who escaped from the massacre of the Russians when Imre Nagy and Kadar, Janos Kadar, tried to set up an independence or a state of Hungary. And they were communists, but they wanted home rule, and Russians, Khrushchev and Malenkov, those people, said no. And Andropov, Yuri Andropov, was the Soviet ambassador, And he called in the Soviet army to crush Budapest and to crush the Hungarian Revolution. Many Hungarians escaped to the West, and we had two young Hungarians, 15 and 16, who came to work on our dairy farm at our school. I don't know where they are today, but many Hungarians came to America and were successful businessmen, set up restaurants and that sort. In fact, I don't know if Pataki, the former governor of New York, his ancestors, his relatives came from Hungary in 1956. Let's see. Then in 1959, Charles Van Dorn, who was on a quiz show winner, he confessed that one of the quiz shows, I think it was 21, had been fixed. And another presidential election in 1976, and we seem to have some of the same elements here today. Carter defeated Ford. Now, when Ford ran, when Carter ran against Reagan, during Carter's administration, we had the gasoline strike. Carter refused to allow American athletes to go to Moscow. And there were long lines to get gasoline, and we are seeing these today in the East, where the hurricane has devastated the eastern seaboard. Now, some people who are more religious than we are think that maybe they remember Noah's Ark and the Bible, and they're thinking that maybe this is the Lord's wrath because of the politicians who have embraced such things as pornography, pedophilia, promoting gay marriage, allowing open gay lesbianism and NAMBLA in the military. And you notice none of those people are talking. Cuomo, Gillibrand, the senator, was supposed to be a Catholic. Cuomo was supposed to be a Roman Catholic. You have the other senator from Schumer. You know, and none of these people have, haven't seen anything on the news about what they're going to do to help those poor people in New York or in New Jersey. And where the senators from New Jersey, one is a Cuban, former Cuban refugee, there's been nothing in the media from these people to what they're going to do to expedite disaster help to their constituents. Isn't this interesting? Now, we talked about Warren Harding, Teddy Roosevelt's daughter, Mrs. Longworth, who married the Speaker of the House, referred to Warren G. Harding as just a slob and a product of the smoke-filled room, which was the party leaders got together in this smoke-filled room, smoking cigars, drinking whiskey, and playing poker, and that's the origin of our ending thing, politics and poker. Anyway, Harding was selected as the Republican presidential nominee for the 1920 election. Anyway, Harding had quite a background. He was a musician. He played every instrument, I think, except the trombone. There's a picture of him playing the tuba, which I played at one time, or the sousaphone. He was a newspaper publisher. He butchered the language using this term normalcy when the correct term is normality. But he did say some interesting things, give some interesting speeches, and he did set up the Bureau of the Budget. And the remarkable thing, for somebody of Negro ancestry, he was the first American president to go to the South and give a speech to the white segregationists down there, telling them they had to give the Negro his civil rights. No other president had done that. No other, especially Republicans, who the blacks after the Emancipation Proclamation supported the Republican Party. I don't have a copy of that speech in our archives, but Warren Harding also supported the American military, our soldiers. He brought the he dedicated the Unknown Soldier tomb in Arlington National Cemetery, and also his wife. Since he was in the newspaper business, she was the first lady or first presidential candidate's wife to know how to work with the media in a presidential campaign. So she was very good at that. She was known as the Duchess, Florence Eldridge. Of course, Warren Harding was supposed to have screwed around and had an illegitimate daughter, but that was an allegation, which doesn't, we can't give any foundation to that because we don't know. But the allegation or the accusation that he had, quote, Negro or African blood seems to have a lot more substance, given pictures of his ancestors, which are in some of the archives. Anyway, here's one of his speeches, and we're going to play this right now when he talks about military veterans. This was after World War One. He also tried to do something with the Bureau of Veterans Affairs, which is now called the Veterans Administration, which has been riddled with scandals since the end of the American Civil War. One of the scandals that involved the Grant Administration. But here is Harding talking about military veterans.
As those on need the realization of the unusual character of this occasion, our Republic has been at war before. It has actually received the supreme sacrifices of its sons and daughters, and faith in America has been justified. Many sons and daughters made the sublime offer and went to hallowed graves as the nation's defenders. But we never before sent the men to battle under the flag in a foreign land. Never before was there the impressive spectacle of thousands of dead returning to find eternal resting place in the beloved homeland. The incident is without parallel in the history that I know. These dead know nothing of our ceremonies today. They sense nothing of the sentiment or the tenderness which brings their wasted bodies to the homeland for burial, close to kin and friends and cherished associations. These poor bodies are but the clay tenements once possessed of souls which flamed in patriotic devotion, lighted new hopes on the battlegrounds of civilization, and in their sacrifices fed on to accuse autocracy before the court of eternal justice. We are not met for them, though we love and honor and speak a grateful tribute. It would be futile to speak to those who do not hear, or to sorrow for those who cannot sense it, or to rejoice those who cannot know. But we can speak for country, we can reach those who sorrowed and sacrificed through their service, who suffered through their glory, who glory with the Republic through their heroic achievements, who rejoice in the civilization their heroism preserves. Every funeral, every memorial, every tribute is for the living, an offering in compensation of sorrow. When the light of life goes out, there's a new radiance in eternity. Somehow the glow of it relieves the darkness which is left behind. Never a death, but somewhere a new life. Never a sacrifice, but somewhere an atonement. Never a service, but somewhere, somehow an achievement. These have served, which is the supreme inspiration in living. They have earned everlasting gratitude, which is the supreme solace in dying. No one may measure the vast and varied affections and sorrows centering on this priceless cargo of bodies, once living, fighting for and finally dying for the Republic. One's words fail, his understanding is halted, his emotions are stirred beyond control when contemplating these thousands of beloved dead. I find 100,000 sorrows touching my heart. There's ringing in my ears like an admonition eternal, an insistent call. It must not be again. It must not be again. God grant that it will not be, and let a practical people join in cooperation with God to the end that it shall not be. I would not wish a nation for which men are not willing to fight and if need be to die, but I do wish for a nation where it's not necessary to us that sacrifice. I do not pretend that millennial days have come, but I can believe in the possibility of a nation being so righteous as never to make a war of conquest, and a nation so powerful in righteousness that none will dare invoke her wrath. I wish for us such in America. These heroes were sacrificed in the supreme conflict of all human history, They saw democracy challenged and defended it. They saw civilization threatened and rescued it. They saw America affronted and resented it. They saw our nation's rights imperiled and stamped those rights with a new sanctity and renewed security. We shall not forget, no matter whether they lie amid the sweetness and the bloom of the homeland or steep in the soil they crimson, our mindfulness, our gratitude, our reverence shall be in the preserved republic, the maintained liberties, and the supreme justice for which they died.
You notice that Harding used the term homeland, so that's the origin. He also used another term, ask not what you can do for your country, which a lot of people think that John Kennedy originated that phrase. He didn't. John Kennedy, in fact, Ted Sorensen was his ghostwriter. And we'll end with an appropriate theme for the Harding's biography, Harding's life, and Harding's presidency, politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes. All right.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, better.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call up.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Yep, which is more important. We'll be back Monday with part two of Warren G. Harding, some of the things you didn't know about him. A very interesting man, even though he was a slob. This is Peter Paul Bozzola, and we also will be doing an interview scheduled with Patrick Butler, the premier political correspondent in the state of Illinois. Been around for, I think, over 50 years. We go back... He was ahead of me, well ahead of me in school. So we'll be back. Have a quiet weekend. Hopefully you won't be hit by another hurricane or any other disaster. And again, the motto of our Veritas USA, Amicus Veritas, the new shadow, is San Francisco, California, and the nation is ready for renaissance, renewal, and reform. This whole business about change and forward is really meaningless. What's the difference if you just change the faces and you still have the same political corruption and public incompetence and that sort of thing? So we'll be back Monday at 4 o'clock, and hopefully we'll have all our technical problems resolved. We had a lot of new equipment. So good night, and go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We're going to get up our new videos.